The Life of Dwight L. Moody. Chapter 13. First Visit to Great Britain. His appreciation of other speakers was one of Mr. Moody's marked characteristics. He was always hunting for some new and well-taught Bible teacher or some successful gospel preacher to address his Illinois Street Church or the Farewell Farwell Hall meetings. No minister of any note passed through Chicago without Mr. Moody's learning of his presence in town, and if his orthodoxy was assured, he was certain to receive a pressing invitation to address one or both of the gatherings at the church or association. This happy faculty of enlisting others brought him into close personal touch with most of the leading Christian workers, clerical or lay, who visited Chicago, including many from abroad. From these later friends, Mr. Moody heard much of English methods of work, and he felt that a greater knowledge of them would be very helpful. In his abrupt and impulsive way, he announced one Sunday in 1867 to his mission school that he was going to start for England that week. Mrs. Moody was at that time a sufferer from asthma, and their physician had suggested that a sea voyage with an entire change of air and scene was desirable. There were two men in England whom Mr. Moody had a great desire to hear and meet, Charles H. Spurgeon and George Mueller. And with the twofold purpose of affording a beneficial trip for Mrs. Moody and making the acquaintance of these leaders in Christian work, he went abroad. At that time, he was unknown in England, except to a few who had visited America. Among those were Fountain J. Hartley, Secretary of the London Sunday School Union, who invited Mr. Moody to speak at an anniversary meeting in Exeter Hall. It was customary for a speaker on such an occasion to be connected with a resolution as its mover or seconder in order to give him a right to the floor. Mr. Moody was therefore assigned to move a vote of thanks to the chairman of the evening, who in this instance was a well-known Earl of Shaftesbury. Towards the close of the meeting, says Dr. Henry Clay Thumble, in relating this incident of which he was a witness, the chairman yielded his chair to the vice chairman in order that such a resolution could be offered. The vice chairman announced that they were glad to welcome their American cousin, the Reverend Mr. Moody of Chicago, who would now move a vote of thanks to the noble Earl, who was presided on this occasion. With a refreshing frankness and an utter disregard for conventionalities and mere compliments, Mr. Moody burst upon the audience with a bold announcement. The chairman has made two mistakes. To begin with, I'm not the Reverend Mr. Moody at all. I'm plain Dwight L. Moody, a Sabbath school worker. And then, I'm not your American cousin. By the grace of God and your brother, who is interested with you in our Father's work for his children. And now about this vote of thanks to the noble Earl for being our chairman this evening. I don't see why we should thank him any more than he should thank us. When at one time they offered to thank our Mr. Lincoln for presiding over a meeting in Illinois, he stopped it. He said he tried to do his duty, and they tried to do theirs. He thought it was an even thing all around. That opening fairly took the breath away from Mr. Moody's hearers. Such talk could not be gouged by any standard. Its novelty was delightful, and Mr. Moody carried his English hearers from that time on. He soon found his way to the Young Men's Christian Association in Aldergate Street and left a permanent impression on English religious life by establishing a noon prayer meeting. The first meeting was held on May 13th. When nearly 100 men were present, and the numbers continued to increase until there was a daily attendance of from 200 to 300. Mr. Moody's first text was, "To every man his work." His experiences of gospel work in Chicago were told with a freshness and vigor that captivated all who heard him. The unique and original way in which he pursued his efforts among the rough and lawless children of Chicago was described with thrilling interest. The following letter to his mother is an indication of the impression Mr. Moody received at this time. I have at last got started here. I sent you an account of the daily union prayer meeting. It is a great success. They are starting them in different parts of the city, and I am in hopes great good will come from it. They are also starting them in different parts of the kingdom. The great orphan schools of George Mueller are at Bristol. He has 1,150 children in his house. They never ask a man for a cent to support them. He calls on God, and God sends money to him. It is wonderful to see what God can do with a man of prayer. When Mr. Moody was in Bristol on May 10, 1867, he gave an address to the Sunday School Bible class, closing with the request that the young men who desire prayer should rise. 15 members of the class rose immediately, among them John Kenneth McKenzie, then a lad of 16, who later became a medical missionary to China, and was the means of founding and conducting the first government medical school in that empire in connection with the London Missionary Society. While Mr. McKenzie dated his earnest desire for a spiritual life from that occasion, he had not yet fully realized it, and it was not till the anniversary of the day on which he had been impressed by Mr. Moody's address that he rose with several companions at a meeting of the Young Men's Christian Association and avowed himself a follower of the Lord Jesus. 8 years after his college student life, he met Mr. Moody in a never-to-be-forgotten meeting. Mrs. Bryson, his biographer, says, "It seems to have greatly cheered the heart of the young soldier, who was just putting on the armor for service in the foreign field, to receive words of counsel and blessing from one who, some years before, had been the instrument in God's hands of leading him to more earnest thought concerning the varieties of the unseen and eternal." It was at this time that Mr. Moody heard the words, which marked the beginning of a new era in his life. "The world has yet to see what God will do with and for and through and in and by the man who is fully and wholly consecrated to him." He said, "A man," thought Moody. He did not say a great man, not a learned man, nor a rich man, nor a wise man, nor an eloquent man, nor a sharp man, but simply a man. "I am a man, and it lies with the man himself whether he will or will not make this entire and full consecration. I will try my utmost to be that man." The world has yet to see what God will do with and for and through and in and by the man who is fully and wholly consecrated to him. Being introduced one day by a London friend to Mr. Bowley of Dublin, that's B-E-W-L-E-Y, the latter asked, "Is this young man all O and O? What do you mean by O and O?" said the friend. "Is he out and out for Christ?" was the reply. This remark deepened the impression made, and from that time forward, the endeavor to be O and O for Christ was supreme. Before sailing from New York, a friend had advised him strongly not to miss meeting the missionary veteran, Dr. Duff, and also to see Dr. Guthrie's work in Edinburgh. Thither, therefore, Mr. Moody went, and while he failed in his special purpose, he had the opportunity of speaking one night in the Free Assembly Hall and meeting several prominent religious leaders. This trip was very helpful to Mr. Moody, and he never ceased to appreciate the associations then formed. In speaking at the annual breakfast of the Young Men's Christian Association in London, shortly before returning to America, he said, "It has been my privilege to be in your city 2 months, and I have thought you were exalted to heaven with privileges, privileges so numerous that I pity a man who, without hope, goes down to death from the city of London. I have longed to see the founders of the Young Men's Christian Association. Far away in the western part of America, I have often prayed for this association, and my heart has been full this morning as I sat here, listening to my friends and looking them in the face. I do not know that I shall ever have this privilege again. It is not likely that I shall. Next month I return to my home, but I shall always remember this morning. It is said that Napoleon, after his army had accomplished a great victory, ordered a medal to be struck with these words, 'I was there, that was all.' In after years, when I am far away in the western prairies of America, and when May comes, I shall think that in 1867 I was there, And as the years roll on, if it shall be my privilege to meet in yonder city any that are here this morning, we may there sit down by the bands of the beautiful river, the water of life that flows from the throne of God, and talk of this morning. It will give us pleasure then to think that we were together in the fight. Then Mr. Moody went on to tell of new methods of work in America, especially in Chicago, which moved everyone, now to laughter and now to tears. His own visits to the saloons and other haunts of sin developed an ingenuity and tactfulness that showed themselves born of a deep and passionate love for the salvation of souls. A trip abroad seldom proves so great a success as did this journey, the purpose of its undertaking being perfectly gratified. Mrs. Moody entirely and fully cured, while Mr. Moody met both George Mueller and Charles H. Spurgeon. A short visit to the Paris Exposition and the Great World Fair inaugurated by Napoleon III was an added pleasure. On July 1st, on the eve of their return to America, a farewell reception was given to Mr. and Mrs. Moody in London. The appreciation and friendship which the Sunday school workers, their brother from America, had won among Christian workers during this brief visit of 3 months were widely recognized. In the opinion of one of the speakers, few men have visited a foreign shore, have endeavored themselves to so many hearts in so short a time, and with an unknown name and without letters of commendation, won their way so deeply into the affections of a multitude of Christian brethren, as had Mr. Moody. Few had ever heard of him before, but having talked with him or heard him speak of Jesus, asked for no other warrant to yield him a large measure of their love. It was on this first visit to Great Britain that he met for the first time R.C. Morgan, then and now the editor of that most influential and widely circulated weekly religious periodical known for years as The Revival, and later as The Christian. A warm attachment sprang up at once between these two men who were working, each in his own way, to spread the gospel. In later years, Mr. Moody referred to his early efforts as being in a measure an exhibition of zeal without knowledge, but as he would add, there is much more hope for a man in such a condition than for that man who has knowledge without zeal. Mr. Morgan, a careful and thorough Bible student, was drawn to the young American stranger and from the first gave him sympathy and encouragement, and has ever been a most gracious supporter in all his later projects. Before he visited the British Isles again, Mr. Moody was to receive a more perfect knowledge of the Word of God.